Václav Bartuška was one of the leaders of the student protests which toppled the Czechoslovak communist regime in November 1989. Recently, he has been the Czech energy security troubleshooter and has been recruited as an advisor by Sweden's current EU presidency. During a gap in his busy schedule, I asked Mr. Bartuška how he came to be one of the leaders of the student protests.
I think it was all basically enough to be willing to risk a little bit and do something against the regime. In fact, it wasn't that difficult to become a leader because there were very few people who actually did something openly against it. So if Prague had 40,000 students at the time, the whole number of people who were somehow actively involved in either illegal papers or demonstrations, organizing that stuff, the number would be 20, 30 people, no more. So it was quite easy. There was no queue to join. Everybody was welcome.
And what did you actually do? What was your leadership role?
I got detained on August 21st, 88, at the first big demonstration against the regime. And I suppose what really made them furious were the things I wrote for our student paper, which wasn't exactly illegal, but also not legal. It was just done. Some is that typical one. And I guess that was basically enough. Probably everything that the student movement did before November 89 would seem rather timid by today's standards. They just try to organize a few friends and just talk about things which are going on, write a few things in not-so-official papers. But there were certainly no heroic acts to be done. But even that little brought me a few detentions and stuff like that.
During the actual revolution, what was your role?
I was a member of the Central Committee of Striking Students, and I was also very soon elected by the students to be a member of the Committee of Parliament, which oversees the secret police, and later its disbanding of secret police, and the investigations of what happened and why the police acted the way it did in November 89. So it was basically first just one of several student, many student leaders, and then this, I would say, expert on secret police. The reason for that was that I was the first to be detained by secret police, and I had behind me some experience with interrogations and stuff like that. So I was taken for an expert by my colleagues and friends, which of course wasn't true. I was no expert, but it seemed so.
Do you think everything about 1989 has now been explained sufficiently?
Well, you always have questions and mysteries in the past. I would say the main story is known, and I don't believe in any great conspiracy theories, definitely not in this country, because the favorite conspiracy theory is that if the reformed communists with secret police somehow wanted the government to fall down, the communist leadership to fall down and to have, let's say, the Gorbachev way of revolution, slowly reform. I don't believe that. You don't keep anything secret that's shared by more than two people, and definitely not for years. This is a country where basically everything spills out.
But in some ways, however, the secret police, the way the secret police reacted on the crucial day back when they repressed the student revolution, the march from Vyšehrad, it came out that one student was dead who wasn't dead. I mean, it seemed rather strange. Do you not agree?
Well, once you look at it in context, you have major demonstrations since August 88, October 88, and January, a series of demonstrations, and heard them again in August, and again October 89. So by November 89, the police is becoming more and more experienced with how to suppress demonstration. At the same time, it's becoming more and more tired with it, and especially tired of the pressure from the Communist Party leadership saying, well, there should be no demonstrations. Make sure that nothing happens. Well, you can make sure that nothing happens when there is 20 people, not when there are 20,000. And you can be faster in suppressing, you can be faster in beating them up, you can bring more gentlemen or sticks, or you can bring, as they did on November 17 for the first time, the personal armored carriers, the almost like small tanks. But even with all this, you still have limitations. I mean, you can't really squeeze thousands of people out of certain place fast enough. So there was plenty of, I would say, irritation on the part of the Communist Party and the police leadership, or the Ministry of Interior leadership, about the slowness and the whole disbanding of the demonstrations. So the people who were doing this were rather frustrated. I suppose the reason why they were rather harsh on that day, and we got some rather big beating, was this. As for the secret, as for the dead student, but that news spread the next day, and it was not true. But it was probably one of the catalysts of the whole change. That was the game changer.
Later you came to write a book, Polo Jasno, about partly based on the parliamentary investigation. Yeah, fully based on the parliamentary investigation. Can you explain what you mean by the title?
Polo Jasno in Czech means two things. It means partly sunny, but it also means partly clear. And the book was published in fall 1990, but it was written already during the committee working. The title in Czech says it all. It's partly sunny, it's partly nice weather, finally. And it's partly clear what really happened. And I think that's so true. We don't like much the past, especially the past which is saying something nasty about ourselves. And the communist past is certainly something we don't want to discuss much. Because we have to discuss basically how you can turn a relatively educated, well-off nation in the center of Europe into a nation of slaves.
Over the past few months, you've been the special ambassador for energy security for the Czech Republic, and now you've been asked also to work for the Swedish presidency of the EU. How much was of a surprise was the Swedish offer?
I've been doing this for the last 3 years for the Czech government, and the Swedish offer is to be advisor for the presidency, so I would like to insist that it's their presidency, and their only. This is the Sweden's moment in the sun and in the crosshair of photographers. I am just an advisor to them about Russia, Ukraine and gas, which is pointing to the crisis in January this year, which I think was one of the highlights of our presidency.
And are the Swedish priorities more or less similar to the Czech priorities?
I can just speak for the relatively small area, which is, let's say, the expertise they want from me, which is Russia, Ukraine, natural gas, the possibility of another crisis this winter. In this field, I think that their approach is very similar to the one which we had this January and during the whole presidency, which is basically telling both Moscow and Kiev, no, we are not going to pay any ransom to you. We are not going to be blackmailed by you. You have deals with us, especially Gazprom, to deliver gas to our borders or inside our territory. Please do so and really fix your internal difficulties with each other. Don't really ask us to become arbiters or negotiators between you, because no one outside of Moscow and Kiev really knows what goes on between those two. And there's no way of being a mediator when you don't know all the facts. We understand that there is a huge business going on in gas, in which plenty of people in the Russian and Ukrainian elite are making huge amounts of money. I'm talking about billions of dollars each year. And those who know don't talk, and those who do talk don't know. So there's basically no place for Europe to get involved in this.